Welcome to West Virginia Beer Roads, a podcast all about beer from a West Virginia perspective. I'm Aaron McCoy, here with my podcast partner, Charles Bakway.
Well, thank you, Aaron. We're recording this podcast shortly before the 10-year anniversary celebration of Summit Beer Station in Huntington, West Virginia. You may know that Summit has been arguably the best craft beer bar in the state, and one that stretches the envelope on what all a local craft beer bar can be. Aaron, would you agree with that assessment of mine?
I absolutely would. That is so true. Summit Beer Station is a real highlight among our region's craft beer-focused establishments, and I'm so glad that we have it. But Summit Beer Station truly wouldn't be a thing without the work and dedication of its owner and manager, Jeff McKay. And Jeff is here with us today. So Jeff, welcome back to West Virginia Beer Roads.
Thank you.
Well, Jeff, 10 years is considered quite a landmark in the bar business today. Customers are notoriously fickle and tend to follow the trends, usually preferring something new to something old. It's a challenge to keep any popular bar or business of any sort going 10 years in and keeping it strong. So, Jeff, we're here in May, and Summit Beer Station hit its 10th anniversary a few months back. How does it feel? Is it a challenge to keep this place going? And did you ever think that you'd make a long-term career as a craft beer publican?
I don't know. How can I hit this in one go here? I think in October when we turned 10, to no fanfare.
Well, that's true. It's taken you a long time to decide to have a celebration.
Well, it doesn't feel like 10 years. What does feel like 10 years is the amount of time it took to organize this event. It took us every bit of 9 to 10 months to get the product here, just due in part to state regulations. We don't have to get into that. But I think being able to bend and adapt over the years, for probably the first 3 or 4, I was very stuck in my ways. We only sold beer. We didn't sell cider. We didn't sell wine. So over the years, I've kind of adapted along the way. And I think that's maybe the driving force behind making it 10 years.
Well, a lot has changed in a decade. What's taken you by surprise the most in terms of something you'd never anticipated, if anything?
Well, there's two different. I think the rise in sugary, sweet, cloying, pastry style beers. I didn't really see that becoming a thing. But in hindsight, it made all the sense in the world because Southern Tier, a decade ago, was doing this, and people were going crazy for it. Not that I'm against drinking some of these stouts, but I didn't expect that out of the market or consumer trends heading that way. And then the other, I think, is a more recent development where here specifically, I can't speak to anybody else, but sour beers have just kind of fallen off almost immediately. So I didn't think that sour beers were ever going to go anywhere.
So even here in West Virginia, you say the sour beers craze has subsided.
Yeah, and I think it just one of those situations where American breweries did it to the umpteenth degree and made beer too sour and undrinkable, and I think that turned a lot of people off. So here we are 10 years later. I can remember serving the very first sour beer in West Virginia and saying, oh my, what is the market going to take this? Mm-hmm. Well, they ran with it, and then we ran it into the dirt.
Yeah, so, and I want to make clear here the distinction between what you're calling sour beer.
Yeah,
because, I mean, what we often call sours are those big fruited up, almost sweet and also tart American beers.
Yeah, let's parse that out. Lindemann's Cuvée René Goose. I remember bringing this into the bar, a true, authentic, blended lambic. At the time, felt extremely sour and too funky for most consumers. And really, it wasn't too long after that that the lambic market kind of exploded. It's since imploded on itself. Mm-hmm. And then on the other end of the spectrum, we had kettle sours popping up in America and throwing essentially buckets of lactic acid into the boil and doing these quick sours. I've always kind of stuck to those traditional naturally soured beers, but yeah, I think the market's running away from it.
Well, let's think back to the days before you opened Summit Beer Station. Where was the young Jeff McKay's head? What got you interested in starting a craft beer bar?
You know, I didn't know the answer to this until maybe 2 years ago or so, that I was a recipient of an alumnus award at Marshall, and that was one of the things that they wanted addressed when I spoke, and I really had to contemplate how I was going to explain this story, because as far as I'm concerned, it was just a very selfish story. Mm-hmm. That I was in grad school, going to academic conferences, going to larger cities, traveling, seeing what other places had that we didn't have. And it was just, I at the time, I really resented this area that why don't we have what they have? And it just so happens that a lot of things fell in place for me. I'd always intended to leave. My one-way ticket to Portland, Oregon was canceled because United left Tri-State Airport, and then I've been here ever since.
Oh, thank goodness. Yeah. Thank goodness for United's cancellation.
Yeah.
Wow.
And within a couple months, I was hired at Marshall full-time. I was able to kind of pay off most of my student loans and get in a more comfortable spot. I reached a point where I can't complain about this any longer, about what we don't have. I better do something about it.
Yeah, we're so glad you took that into your own hands and made a change, which changed a lot of the beer culture, really, or has had certainly a big influence on it, around the Huntington market, at least, maybe even into Charleston, where you also, and, you know, Ashland, Kentucky, where you tend to get customers.
Yeah, I don't want to say I'm wholly responsible for some of these things, but I think it's important to maybe mention that as I was opening Summit, I connected with other like-minded people to start Better Beer Coalition, which is Rails and Ales. And I, as far as I'm concerned, that's probably my more important contribution to changing the culture here, that we're one day out of the year exposing 5,000 people to beers they've never been exposed to before.
So we're going to stay back in the old days for a while now, talking about that. You know, think back to the craft beer market here in West Virginia back in 2013, 2014, when you were getting started here with Summit Beer Station. I want you to describe what you thought it was like, what your impressions of the beer market was back then, and, you know, what were the current trends, what were people drinking?
Really, I don't think it's too much different now than it was then, other than when I opened Summit, that was kind of the beginning of the end of Belgian beer in America. to full disclosure, that I'm a Belgian beer fiend. So I was definitely stubborn in that respect, My mode of operation here is to not serve what everybody else is serving. That I needed to differentiate myself. And at the time, we were working with Global Beer Network to come into West Virginia and expand their portfolio. So it was very, very easy to lean into that and have access to probably 7,500 different Belgian beers right out of the gate, and I felt that this is what we had to do. That nobody else in this area was really investing all that heavily in import beer.
No, I get that's 100% true. Yeah,
sure, especially for back then.
Back then, right?
Yeah, and that story doesn't end either. I mean, I'm still trying to grind that out and bringing in new products all the time, I don't. I feel like I have a responsibility to do that for my customers here, and to kind of push push what people think is an acceptable business model in West Virginia. We have customers that that are here on business that are from much larger cities, and they'll make the statement, well, I don't even have this. That's what I like to hear, that I went from West Virginia doesn't have this to larger cities saying we don't have this.
Flip-flop.
Yeah.
And I think there's something to be said for that line of thinking, that kind of business model. I mean, you can be a business, as many people are, and probably very popular business model is following the latest trends, just having what the latest things are and what people are, the buzz is about. Then there's the contrarian model, and I think you're not all the way to contrarian, certainly, but you picked up some of that. You've been steady in your love for the Belgian beers and for the imports in general, and it's grown. So did you start out there relative to what the market was back in 2013, 2014, how would you describe like your first years of tapless there?
I can describe it in the sense that I wasn't charging enough for these products.
I did. I'm so glad you did. Yeah. I enjoyed my beer down there.
I think it probably took me 4 or 5 years to even know what I was doing. Like I said, in retrospect, I can see why I was doing what I was doing, but I didn't understand it at the time. I just wanted to get European beer in front of people.
And to the market.
Yeah. I think at the time my impression was I can either do whatever everybody else is doing, or I can stock the bar with things that I really enjoy, and I'm going to tell you what to drink. And I really haven't changed on that at all. Mm-hmm. And I know that I get a lot of grief from other breweries and brewery reps and distributor reps that, why don't you put this in here? It sells well everywhere else. Well, that's why I don't want it. I don't want the same beer that Applebee's has down the street.
Yeah, I know. Certainly, as my friends and I, who were either home brewers or just people that followed the latest craft beers to some extent, when we discovered that Jeff McKay has a place in Huntington that's doing this, a bunch of us started coming down occasionally from Charleston, but that's probably not your typical customer. I'm sure you had some of those guys in Huntington as well. How would you describe the customers you attracted in the early days?
It was certainly an older crowd. I never sought to college student crowd anyway, but this was a crowd that I would say by and large had traveled the world, or has at least traveled the United States. And I think it's important to note that we barely had any craft breweries in West Virginia in 2013.
No kidding.
So when you have this type of customer base who is probably well-traveled, seen other places, experienced other things, experienced the kind of the brewing revolution in the rest of the country that we didn't have here in West Virginia at the time, that it was an appreciative customer base, and it for me it was fun at the time that I could come into work every day and talk about beer.
Sure.
With people who had the same affinity for beer that I did, and that hasn't changed really either. I will say this: over the years, demographically, our crowd has gotten much younger, but I really think that's probably due in part to us adding additional concepts and trying to expand
marketing. Well, back then, back in the old 10 years that we're staying in, what was your steepest climb when it came to running a retail beer establishment in Huntington?
Trying to navigate all the paperwork and red tape. I mean, I'm trying to do the math on this. How old was I? I was 27. 26 when I first started. Trying to fill this out. Yeah. I didn't know what I was doing. That was difficult. I can remember sending so many emails to ABCA and State Tax Department and everybody else. And guys, I don't know what I'm doing. Hold my hand and go from there. And then I think physically that's the other steep climb is that we built the bar by hand, everything. We built the second floor by hand. We ripped up all of the brick and laid it back down.
Oh, wow.
We built the bar top, everything. So I was motivated, so it didn't feel so steep. But that was a steep climb.
I'm sure. From there to here, I'm sure. So here you are operating your craft beer bar in Huntington, West Virginia, one of the first true craft beer bars in this region of the country. When did you get the feeling that Summit had truly arrived and was going to make it as a business?
3 years ago. I mean, surviving the pandemic.
Challenging. Yeah.
I mean, there were days I would wake up and think, "Oh, this is it." We didn't get the same help here in West Virginia that other businesses did in surrounding states. So it was a real struggle. I think in a less serious note. I knew that we needed to expand the business after like 3 months. This space is too small.
Yeah, because for people that weren't ever in your original space, it was tiny.
It was a closet.
Yeah, more or less.
But it was a closet you built with your own hands.
Uh-huh. Well, so here we are today. We're out in the Summit Beer Station in Huntington, West Virginia, outside in the beer garden. So if you hear some extraneous noises, they're just the city noises that we love to hear. And it's commerce happening, you know. And Jeff has brought us a beer from his illustrious tap list of today, not from back in 2013 when he opened, but a newer beer. So while we're here, we're going to be drinking this. Jeff, would you explain what beer you brought us?
So we launched Cinderlands beers yesterday. So we tapped the first kegs in the state. So I thought it was only fitting that we bring some Cinderlands out here to imbibe in.
Sounds fair enough.
This particular beer is the Full Squish.
Yeah.
So kind of a hazy New England style IPA.
Yeah. Something they've been known for, at least for a number of years in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. I mean, if we're going to talk about beer trends, New England IPAs, I think, are here to stay.
It's interesting that Cinderlands beer, a brand new beer in the state of West Virginia, been in Pittsburgh a number of years, and they have a nice bar, or whatever you want to call it, establishment there and tap room at the Strip District.
Yeah, and I didn't know until yesterday, and they have a whole fooder facility where they're oak aging beers, both clean and sour. So
well,
I keep my fingers crossed that that comes into the state.
Yeah, I'm sure that excites you.
Yes.
Well, throughout the years, Jeff, what would you call the key factors in building popularity for Summit Beer Station?
I think in the early days it was planning events, tap takeovers, getting brewery reps in the door. I think that has kind of come and gone as well. You don't see those that many tap takeovers anymore.
Yeah, you really don't. Nor do you see a ton of brewery reps doing promotions in bars and restaurants these days. I mean, there's an occasion like when a new beer line comes in, like the Cinderlands. Well, anyway, you go ahead and explain how you built the popularity.
I knew that that's right out of the gate that I wanted to throw these events. I was used to going down to Asheville and drinking at Thirsty Monk. I would spend a week-long vacation and be in Thirsty Monk 6 out of those 7 days. And they had weekly tap takeovers, pint nights, giving away POS and brewery merch. And mm-hmm. I felt it was a good way to motivate customers who were used to attending those events elsewhere, and also motivate customers who weren't used to this style of event. It was just unheard of in West Virginia at the time. So I've been making a push to bring them back, and I've discussed this with a few wholesaler reps that I think some of these breweries have gotten really lazy, and they would rather sit at home and text you rather than coming out and working the market. So I've told my reps that, hey, we're gonna force their hand. We need to get people back in the market. Because we're not really engaging consumers the way we did even just 5 years ago. So I'm trying to have a return to form with that. Mm-hmm. I don't want things to get stale.
Yeah, I'm curious. You brought up your visits to Thirsty Monk in Asheville. And I know the upstairs bar, the first floor bar, was where they do a lot of the beer promotions. But one I think I'm sure you visited regularly too was the downstairs or the basement bar where all the Belgians were. Did that help you fine tune some of your interest in Belgians and what would sell in our market?
Yeah, honestly, that's where I spent most of my time, and I have no shame. I like
it's a fun place.
I also wanted to take that concept too, so I did my best to have my own little Thirsty Monk in those first days.
No, there's nothing wrong with borrowing from a wonderful establishment. And back in those days, that was one of the better beer bars around. Well, Jeff, I'm guessing it was a big decision when you decided to move your business from where you started in a little closet to the heart of downtown here in a nice spot where we sit today. And talk about the factors that were important in making that decision and in making that move.
Yeah, I knew out of the gate that we had to expand. There was just no getting around it. Initially, what we tried to do was what Taps has now is the patio out front. But lest we forget how difficult rules and regulations and code was back then, we couldn't legally have that that patio. So we regrouped after a lot of discussions with the ABCA, and I happened to get in touch with Bill Dargish over at Pullman Square, and that's initially where we were going to move, was where Black Sheep is now, and we were going to find a restaurant partner, and that kind of fell apart, and then we serendipitously got in touch with Gary Ward and Beckett Ward, who now own this particular space, and they had the same vision that I had, and it just clicked immediately. You know, we got to do this. I probably agreed too quickly at the time. I was just so motivated that, I have to come up with the money to do this, but thankfully it all worked out.
It definitely has, and it's a great space here with the tap room and the outdoor beer garden. It's a lot larger and nicer than the tiny original place. And obviously, we've talked about this, and I'm sure customers have also noticed that your beer offerings have skewed through the years and taken more of a European stance. And you kind of mentioned a little bit about your current philosophy in that you kind of want to push the envelope a bit and maybe not offer what others are seeing elsewhere. Is there anything you want to kind of add to that as far as keeping with your current philosophy of the offerings that you do have and try to keep on tap?
Yeah, it's kind of more of the same. The way we run our tap list currently is that the left side of the board is all European. The right side is typically mostly American. And I think that's how we strike this balance, or else we're going to have 27 European beers on tap and nobody's going to stop me. So I will say that I think we've leaned in harder on smaller European breweries. And I've really taken a stance on culturally important beers as well that are regional styles within Germany, Belgium, and et cetera. So over the years, I've come to terms with having a set line on certain beers. My mode of operation out of the gate was, we need to rotate everything. We need to keep this fresh. And I really backtracked on that. So we keep Gaffel Kolsch on all times. And we always have some sort of naturally soured beer on tap. And always have a Pilsner. So I've shifted gears from Belgium to Germany and other kind of lager countries as of late.
And also, you've been a proponent, although selectively, of West Virginia breweries. So talk a little bit about how that's been working for you.
Yeah, there are really a handful of West Virginia breweries who we work with, and I think most understand where I'm at with how I approach my tap list. We've got much cooler, more cooler space dedicated to West Virginia beer than we do for draft lines, but I've always operated under the idea that just because it's local doesn't mean it's good. So I've been incredibly choosy over the years with what I decide to bring in. And the breweries I do work with, if they put out something that's not good, I let them know.
Feedback is
yeah,
key.
much to their chagrin. But if I was putting out something that didn't taste as it was intended to, I would hope that somebody would let me know. So
yeah, and it's hard to find a bar anymore that, if they're not a true craft beer bar, that cares about that. They put on stuff, whether it's the best of that style or the mediocre of that style.
Yeah, I don't think that the distributors like me very much in that regard. That sometimes I'll open up a can and I'll send the whole case back.
Well,
I'll tag kegs that I think were bad, and so they don't go back in stock. So,
well, sure.
Yeah, I really take pride in that, and I want to make sure that I'm content with what's on tap. That everything is
as intended.
Well, what I've liked and admired about your business practices through the years is that you've been that true advocate for the best beers, the best representatives of those styles that are available to you. And you've challenged your beer distributors to bring you more obscure beer brands, top quality ones, but labels not well known in West Virginia or the tri-state region here. So talk for a minute about your work with beer distributors and how you get them to bring in beers they probably had little interest in selling until you asked them for it.
I'd say right out of the gate, I was able to convince them simply because I would pre-sell all of this and then I would buy it all. So it was product in, product out for them. I do think that there are, over the years, some beers that I've brought in that distributors have found value in and found a market for. I think most recently our Gaffel Kolsch line. I first brought that into the market with North Central maybe 5 years ago, maybe six, and we launched it at Rails and Ales, and it was something that I had always wanted to have on tap. I'm such a stickler for authenticity that this is a true authentic Kolsch from Cologne. And no offense to any American breweries that are making this style, but it's such a delicate beer that, you know, it's hard to compete with
the original
with Kölner's with their beer.
Yeah, no, and Kolsch is a perfect example where American brewers love to slap their Kolsch name on
Kolsch style ale
on a blonde beer, yeah. But it isn't Kolsch if you know what Kolsch really is. And it kind of annoyed me, and I'm glad to see that you've raised the profile of what Kolsch beer really is. And I think even some of our local brewers may have, I don't know if they got the tip from you that they need to up their game, but some of the local brewers have even, you know, released some pretty good Kolsches.
We're actually getting ready to bring in another Kolsch brewery, Scion. It should be here at the end of the month. So we're going to kind of freshen things up a little bit and put Scion on tap for a while.
Now, I've stumbled out of their outlets in Cologne a few times. Good beer, though, and glad
yes.
to see you. I'll be happy to see that coming. Well, you know, something else you're known for your work with, you know, beyond working with your distributors closely to get new beers in the state, it's your work with government entities in relation to the regulation of the retail beer industry. You've lobbied the state legislature like no other retailer I know of in efforts to improve the regulatory climate and other issues around beer sales. So talk a little bit, if you would, about your major successes in that arena and also the work that's still to be done.
Yeah, I don't want to take too much credit. I just feel that I have to grind this out, I have oppositional defiance. And if the state tells me I can't do something, I'll be damned if I listen to that. I'm going to change whatever needs to be changed. But I've kind of worked in the shadows over the years. I never really wanted much of a presence to be known that I'm trying to push for these things. But I think it really all started. I can think of the exact moment that I felt that, or an obligation that I needed to help myself and other businesses. I was reading Draft Magazine, and West Virginia was the only state that hadn't legalized growlers yet. So I got in touch with Doug Scaff and some of the Democrats at the time in the legislature, back when they controlled the legislature. And they did a kind of speaking tour around the state. And I thought, here's my chance. So I unloaded on the speaking tour of all the things that were restrictive and holding my business back. And thankfully, Scaff, Miley, a few others, sat down with me. I don't know why they thought that a 26-year-old, 27-year-old has any business having this discussion, but thankfully they did. And I really hit the ground running with that and made some connections in the legislature and just kind of planted the seeds with what I thought needed to be changed. And we've really accomplished a lot within the last few years, but there's still more work to do.
Yeah, and on that work to do, do you have any just bullet point, one or two items you're looking at for the future?
It's a lot of stuff that, unless you're in the trenches, you don't know is restrictive. And I think the number one is making label approval easier for breweries. So we still have paper submission. We don't have online submission for these things. A couple years ago, I pushed for basically an affidavit that breweries could sign and say, hey, this all the product that we're bringing into West Virginia is within the acceptable margin of error in ABV, and that got nixed. I'm still going to push for that. But I'll give you a good case example for why I want to do this is the reason that our anniversary is in May this year and not in October is because of that label approval. It took us close to a year to get all these products here in the state. So,
well, you've been a shining light in that area, especially around legislation, state legislation, that helps improve especially our retail side of the beer business in West Virginia. Well, Jeff, you've promised us another taster here that we're going to try, and I want to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to open up with tasting beer number 2 from Summit Beer Station. If you're a West Virginia resident who loves good beer, visit our West Virginia-focused website that's all about beer from a West Virginia perspective. BrilliantStream.com has articles, news, and interviews that will keep you up to date with West Virginia's craft beer world, and maybe even lead you to a few gems you didn't know about. Our West Virginia Beer Roads podcast lets you hear it straight from the mouth of West Virginia's top craft brewers and best beer publicans. So let's give a hooray to West Virginia craft beer. And we're back at Summit Beer Station in downtown Huntington, West Virginia. Aaron and I are here with proprietor Jeff McKay.
That's right, and Jeff brought us out a second beer. So, Jeff, can you describe what you brought us?
Yeah, I thought it was, if we're going to talk about European beer, we better go to Europe.
That's fair.
And I brought you out Einger Maibock. So, here we are. We're in May. We better drink some May beer. Kind of a strong 7% lager that drinks like fresh baked bread.
Oh my goodness.
It's very, very biscuity.
That is, yeah, the breadiness and the...
Lots of breadiness.
And, oh man, it's just...
It's rich, but not heavy.
It massages my tongue.
It's it's dangerous at 7% too. And I always try to bring this in every year. I think it's fantastic beer. I love Einger. Everything they do is true to style and nearly perfect as far as I'm concerned.
It's been a line that we've had in West Virginia for a good while, and one of the, back when we didn't have much else, it was certainly one of the better breweries that were represented on the beer lists of West Virginia. It's still an excellent brewery.
Yeah, if anything, the interest in these beers have just increased too. I couldn't give this stuff away 10 years ago, and now people come in, what lagers do you have? Okay, we got you.
Oh yeah, that's a great one.
Well, before our break, we were talking about your work, kind of lobbying and government relations and things of that sort. But I know not only have you worked with the state legislature, but you've also worked with your city government closely, especially on the recent development of the POTA, which allows patrons to take cups of beer outside to the sidewalk and walk around town with them and maybe go to other bars with them that are participating. So what's been your involvement with that here in Huntington, and how's it going?
Again, kind of born out of the pandemic, I was scheduling pretty infrequent meetings with the city because they had more important things to do than listen to me. But I wanted to push for this, and I felt that if I could get Mayor Williams on board and have him, along with myself and some others, pressure Charleston and legislators to get this done, that I think it would be a boon for the industry. My thinking all along was that we needed this just to get around a lot of the restrictions that the ABCA has on outdoor dining and outdoor seating. I didn't really want this just so people could wander around and drink. I wanted this so that businesses had the tools and the ability to be successful, that they could get their POTA permit or an outdoor drinking permit, and then they can put the seats out without having to report to anybody other than the municipality. Since the pandemic, I really pushed we need to give our municipalities more power, and POTA does that in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it does hand over to your cities and jurisdictions that they have to set it up and allow it and then regulate it, I assume, at least to a great extent. I'm sure it's in partnership with the Alcohol Beverage Control Agency.
Yeah, there's a whole pile of paperwork for the city to go through, thankfully, that I don't have to touch. Shout out to Sarah, because she's the one that helped make that happen, along with a few others. But really, the process is pretty simple. It was a bit of a struggle right out of the gate, just because I think we were the first municipality to try and tackle that. But my understanding now is that it's fairly easy. Since the last legislative session, we have a few more permissions. Other license types can participate in POTA now, not just liquor licensees.
Yeah, I think that was a real oversight, probably unintentional by the legislature, but an oversight that they didn't allow just beer-only bars to participate in the first go-round, and now that's been corrected by the policy or by legislation, I guess.
Yeah, I think how should I put this? The commissioner took the spirit of the law and and helped us out a bit, because we goofed a little bit this past session and put the code in the wrong section of the state constitution.
Yeah.
Back to the drawing board for next session.
Yeah, for people who aren't aware of that, there was a little error, I guess, in the bill drafting that did refer to the wrong place, and so it technically isn't right, but the ABCA commissioner, as Jeff said, has allowed it to go ahead and go forward. And you know, the public outdoor designated area is what they're called, and they've been modeled after what you saw. And Jeff, you're close to Ohio here, just across the river. Ohio's had their version of this for a couple of years, and is that kind of where you got your enthusiasm for it?
Yeah, I remember reaching out to a couple legislators and expressing to them that we're putting our border cities at a disadvantage by not getting on top of this. I can remember being on calls and telling people, do we want to be in competition with Ashland, Kentucky, or Ironton, or Portsmouth, or do we just want to be left behind? So the best way to get stuff done in the legislature is to say that Ohio does it better than we do. So
Jeff's found the key.
Yeah. So I put a little bit of the legwork in trying to get DORA rules and regs in front of some legislators, and people ran with it, thankfully.
Yeah, he said DORA. That is the Ohio's POTA, call POTA. Anyway.
Refreshment area.
Don't ask me.
Yeah, designated outdoor refreshment area. Who comes up with this stuff?
I always call the POTA the public outdoor drinking area, which I know that's not what it stands for, but that's...
Sometimes we over-engineer these things, guys.
Yes, acronyms. It's all about the acronyms. Well, Jeff, I don't want to close this podcast until I hear about some of the highlights through the years, which there's definitely been some. What would you say are some of the most memorable events and memorable people that have been a part of Summit's history?
I'll sum this up to start. It's a strange feeling to know you've been around so long that you've seen customers come and go. It's a bit bittersweet sometimes.
I'm sure.
I guess make a sad note is that we've had customers that have passed away. That it's tough that hey, we haven't seen this person in a while, and you find them in the obituary. But let's talk about the good stuff. I think opening the doors there for the first week or so when I didn't know what I was doing and just really excited. I don't know how I worked all day at Marshall and would walk to Summit every night and bartend until midnight and then rinse repeat every single day of the week. I think opening the doors on our first expansion was a stressful but exciting time. I can remember... The old location felt like it was falling apart, and I couldn't get out of there soon enough. The very last day that we were open, the glass rinser broke. I remember we had KBS day, and two chairs were broken. And like, this place is falling apart. I got to get out of here. And moving over here and having a more open space, it just allowed me to throw more events. And our anniversary parties are really kind of my highlight of the year. Seeing a lot of industry people come in that day, and we get a talk shop for a day, and probably imbibe a little too much. But I'm excited about the upcoming anniversary because of that. I'm ready to get some of my favorite beers on tap.
Well, I don't want to leave this history discussion, and I know I've enjoyed so much seeing people in the bar today that I did see all the way back, you know, 10 years ago. And it's still wonderful to see you've developed that loyalty in the customer base. But beyond customers, another great thing that you've had are some wonderful staff people. And I certainly want to give a plug for some of them, some of the wonderful bartenders, mainly that's what you've had, bartenders here. You might want to just talk a little bit about how that's occurred, how you keep those good people, and...
Yeah, we haven't had much turnover at all in the last 10 years. I mean, we have effectively long-term staff.
Right.
John, who's here tonight, has been with us since we moved to this current location.
Yeah.
7 years ago or whatever it was. So I've always felt that I have a responsibility to keep my staff happy and make sure that they're in a good place financially as well.
Very important.
I would like to think I'm friends with all of my staff. we'll see if that's reciprocal.
I hope so. I've never heard them talk bad.
Yeah, no. We all go out for drinks and go out to dinner, and it's a lot of times it doesn't feel like a boss employee dynamic over here.
Well, I know you've spun off a couple that opened their own businesses and things. It's been nice to see.
Yeah, I would say that. Probably half of our staff that have moved on for whatever reason are either still within the industry or they've opened up their own businesses. So I'm really proud about that.
As you should be. Jeff, are there any big future plans that you'd like to share with West Virginia's craft beer community? Anything maybe that's new and upcoming at Summit Beer Station?
It's just grinding it out and bringing in a new product all the time. I mean, I just never turn that off. We're bringing in every single beer that we're bringing in for our anniversary this Saturday is brand new to the state. So, we got about close to 60 new brands registered in West Virginia. Some of my all time favorite, European beers, Terrace Bulba from De La Sin, Double X Bitter from Daronka. De Blagie Saisons.
So, folks, you're going to have a waterfall out here of some of these great European beers that we travel across the water to go drink, and now we're going to be able to get them in Huntington, West Virginia. Wow.
Yeah. We've got Driefonteinen, Fantôme, all of that's coming. And by the end of the month, we're going to launch DNV Imports too, who has St. Bernardus, Duchess, Girardin, really, really nice stuff.
That's very exciting.
Yep.
And you are thrilled. I can see it in your eyes.
Yeah, I'm waiting. I'm waiting for those Canteon label registrations too. So I'm just like foaming at the mouth.
Well, I hope it happens sooner than later.
Yes, I agree.
And finally, as we wrap up this podcast session today, Jeff, if you could go back in time and give yourself some helpful advice, what would it be in terms of your own business ventures?
I wish I would have been more receptive to dedicated draft beer lines. I should have been on top of that. I didn't. It's not that it's too late now. We have dedicated lines, but over the years, I come to find out if you support a brewery, they'll support you back. It's just that easy. So over the years, we've made great relationships because I've chosen brewery partners for these dedicated lines. So like Chimay, we always have Chimay on tap. We're one of a handful of Chimay ambassadors in the U.S. We're like one of 12. And that's due in part to us just supporting that brand and keeping it on tap at all times. I wish that right out of the gate, I would have been more selective with some of the beers I brought in. I felt at the time that I had to have everything because there wasn't much available in the state. I mean, the amount of breweries we had available in West Virginia, I can count on one hand. So I think I made some concessions in my own standards at that point, but I've really dug my heels in the ground on that. I mean, we only sell independently made beer. I wish I would have chosen to do that a long time ago as well. So it's just trying to keep those standards set and remain fresh and motivated.
Yeah, just curious. As they say, hindsight is everything. And, of course, we all have advice, I imagine, for our younger selves, but that makes sense
in
this industry.
And you have to learn from those mistakes. You can't hit a home run every time. So, we've failed in some respects and just learned and adapted.
Well, Jeff, it's been an honor and a true pleasure sitting here with you, Aaron and I sitting here with you today, to help celebrate and prepare for the celebration of your 10th anniversary at Summit Beer Station. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. I echo that. We are very excited, and congratulations on 10 years.
Thank you. Can't wait to celebrate.
This brings us to the close of another podcast. Remember, you can subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast host. Thank you for listening to West Virginia Beer Roads.
West Virginia Beer Roads is a production of BrilliantStream.com.